Looking for work, better pay, better work environment? We can help. Call Kelly Jobs today at 502-425-7131 to speak with a recruiter today. Score a better job with us. Call 502-425-7131 or visit kellyjobs.com. That's kellyjobs.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Part of the show, text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
Wait, we're gonna ruin our reputation actually calling guests on time. The hell are we doing?
I'm still like 2 minutes late.
No, that's different when you're playing the open to the rejoin. You know, the guest understands that. You want to have the guest on the phone and get in the flow and the rejoin being played. And so, but you might have to hang up and let him wait for 5 more minutes.
Well, I mean, I haven't called him yet. So,
I thought you had him on the phone already.
No, we can do a quick Bet Rivers Twitter poll and make ourselves 5 minutes late.
No, that's all right. Let's get him on. But I do want to mention something. I hope I remember it at the end of this, because I think it'll give you something to possibly look for on Twitter if I can pull it off. I'll tell you what it is exactly. Anybody who's seen, been to Pittsburgh or has seen footage of it, very often, I don't know what that thing's called. It's the thing that goes up the side of the mountain. It's like a tram. It's a trolley or a tram or something. It goes right up the side. Pittsburgh's a very, very hilly city. You may not know that, but I mean, it's really, if you get lost, you miss an exit or something, you may drive to West Virginia before you get turned around because of all the hills. It's not like, you know, 10 different ways to get to a certain spot. You got to take one road up this little, you know, hillside or something. Well, right overlooking the opposite side of the river from where we're situated is this. It's got a name of some sort, but it's the it's like a tram. It's almost like a train, so that's why I love it. And it goes. It literally has one purpose. It goes from the top of the hill back down to the bottom of the hill, right near Market Square, where there's all these fabulous shops and live music places and things like that. But people know about it. Not a lot of them have ridden it, because I mean it's more for a recreation than it would be for. A purpose, like it's, you know, it's not a business thing you do. But having done that and said that, I think people are still interested in it. So my room is directly facing it, and I don't know how often it runs, but when it runs, I'm going to try and post a video of it just so people can see what the damn thing looks like going up that or down that very steep thing. Jeff Greer knows stuff about stuff. Jeff, what do you call that thing in Pittsburgh that goes up the side of the mountain there? How do they refer to that? Do you know?
I should know this. It's something to do with Mount Washington, and it's the incline, I believe, is what they call it. It's a pretty cool.
Yes, that is what they call it. That's very good. But the machine that goes up it, I don't know if it's called a trolley or the pit incline. Let's see what if it lists what it is. Yeah, that's what it's called. You're right. They actually call the thing. Yeah. It's the Monongahela incline, or I guess there's two of them, the Duquesne incline. So there you go. How to ride the Pittsburgh inclines.
Yeah, those are some very Pittsburgh names there, Duquesne and Monongahela. Those are some big Pittsburgh phrases.
Is even a website, I'm digging this because, you know, we can argue about anything. Which is the better of the Pittsburgh inclines? Both of them scale the side of Mount Washington and both have equally stunning views. Oh, I like the guy who writes it, cops out. He says, I can't tell you which one is better because I love them both. So there you go. So see if I can get a video up. I don't know which one this is, actually. I just need to find that out before I post it. I'll have to check that out anyway. So, well, long time no chat, my friend. How you been?
I'm wonderful, Bob. How are you?
I'm, all things considered, what's gone on in the last couple of years with me, I'm better than I deserve. So
that's good. I'm glad to hear it.
Nick says, ask you about your kid. What's the matter with your kid?
Absolutely nothing. My kid is doing great. He had his first birthday 2 weeks ago, and he's trucking along. He's a little chunk now, and he's extremely cute. So we're having a good time raising him.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood Nick said ask about. He said ask about his kid because he says he looks just like Jeff. Do you buy that? I don't know what he looks like. So
he does. He looks exactly like me, and it infuriates my wife. If you look at any baby photos of me, we look identical. So that's not great for her.
Oh, are you kidding? That's fantastic. The kid should be so lucky. Good for him. Good for both of you. That's a nice story there. All right, let's talk about first of all, before I even get to that, are you doing stuff still with soccer? Are you doing it with us, or are you doing anything with it, or what's going on with that?
Yes, I'm the PR man and have made the full shift to just racing Louisville for 2023, so I'll be focusing on the NWSL side. We're raring to go. We got our players back in camp 2 weeks ago. They're in Florida for this week, but we're getting ready for some preseason games. And then we're looking at a late March, early April home opener, and I believe we're starting out on the road. So season's fast approaching.
Well, you were a reporter, so you know you have to ask hard questions. How much pushback, bad, whatever, jujus are you getting from the stuff that happened in the off season, where the scandalous behavior around the league? Louisville was not spared from the getting some of that on them. How's that being dealt with internally and externally?
Yeah, no, it's a fair question. And look, I totally understand where people are coming from if they are frustrated with us. I know a lot of people have been. But what I can tell you from my vantage point was on October 3rd, which was the first real weekday where I was in the office to start the off season, was when the U.S. Soccer Report came out. And I and a bunch of the rest of my staff here, my colleagues, have worked our butts off for the last 4 months to get the organization in a great place and be in constant communication with our players, who are the most important part of everything that we're doing. And we feel really good about the progress that we have made, much more enhanced guidelines for a lot of different areas related to HR and working much more closely with the league. And that was something that actually had started before I really got here and has just kind of continued. But we've also added a whole other tray of things that we're doing. So we feel really, really good about where we are as an organization and as a team. It's awful what happened. And I think everybody here is dead set on making sure that, you know, you can never say that you'll be perfect the rest of your existence. But we feel really good in saying that we're in a great spot to prevent anything like this from happening in the future. So we're excited to let the players have fun, and not let the players have fun, but work with the players to have fun and make sure they're cared for and ready to have a winning season. I think we're going to be pretty good this year.
Well, and to that point, you know, that's kind of what I was going to lead to is it's doubly painful. So I can't think of any other adjective, because I think that they had made, they meaning the organization, the team itself, the fans, had made a statement to the country, because this is the highest level of women's professional soccer in this country. I mean, we have some other professional athletes in town, but no disrespect to any of them, including the men's team. They're not at the highest level. This is it, man. These were the highest level, and I think, you know, the Women's Cup event that came about, I think we're all reflections of people saying they got their stuff in order over there. And so now some of that was damaged, and I think that the sooner you get it back on the rails, the sooner you can get that cachet that was in place before, where it was not only good soccer but enthusiastic crowds, and I hate to say it, but that's to some degree a lot of pressure, because we're still fighting the stigma of being a quote-unquote minor league city, and you guys have the opportunity to kind of change that, and I think they were doing that, don't you? And how much of an urgency do you share in that hey, this goes beyond just us, frankly, it's how we're perceived as a city. What do you make of that?
Yeah, look, and nothing like, I mean, absolutely nothing grinds my gears more than people saying we don't have any professional teams here, which I actually have seen from people who work in, like, you know, business circles. I've seen it in media. I've seen our teams referred to as semi-pro, which is just blatantly insulting, first of all. And second of all, as you mentioned, you know, Louisville City is in the second tier of soccer in the United States, professional soccer, but racing is playing in the best women's soccer league in the world. And when people tune into the World Cup in July and August down in Australia and New Zealand, they'll be the best players in the world there, and we're going to have a handful of them playing in that competition. So those players come here to play, and you're right. I mean, I think the biggest thing for us is with all of the success that Louisville City has had, this organization is used to producing winners. And that's why this offseason, just from a team building standpoint, was so important. And obviously we had a lot of other things that were important for us to work on and deal with internally and externally. But building a team, and from that standpoint, it was critically important that we put ourselves in a great spot to be not just competitive in 2023, but feel like we've got a real shot at making the playoffs and winning a bunch of games. And it's a great opportunity, in addition to all of those points that you made, Bob, that when the World Cup happens every 4 years, there's a lot of attention on it. And so when people watch those games this summer, they're going to turn around and say, oh, there's a pro team here, the best league in the world, playing right here. And hopefully by that point, we'll be in a really good position in the standings. And even more people will want to come out to our games. So, again, I mean, I feel really, really good about where we are. And we're excited to keep showing people the progress that we're making as an organization.
Jeff Greer with us here. In addition to the soccer hats he wears and the parenting hats he wears, he, of course, wears a hat as a Louisville basketball reporter, formerly at the Courier-Journal. Now he puts together a little thing called the Floyd Street Tribune, a Louisville Hoops newsletter, and one of the most recent ones you wrote, which I appreciated because everybody has a different reaction. There are some people that we've established are just so pissed off. There's nothing you want to talk about other than reiterate how bad it is and, frankly, you wish they could have a new coach. And that's a topic for a whole other show. We've talked that aspect of this to death. So I like look at it as other ways, which is, for me, I've said the most important part of the season that remains for Louisville is figuring out which and who of these players can play for you going forward next year. And then, of course, the story will tell out in the offseason what players they get in the portal and who they add to this program, but which ones are the ones here now that could help you. And as naive and Pollyanna-ish as this may sound, trying to figure out the places where you can find some joy in this team. And you wrote about that, and I don't think you came across Pollyanna-ish at all, but you talked about, I'm reading back to you your own words, this was after the win against Georgia Tech. In a season as difficult as this, there was something pure and simple and joyous and poetic about Louisville's win on Wednesday night. And you listed some things that you observed, the players showing. I mean, that's what I was struck by, too, how much they just were enjoying it, and they still haven't lost their joy of playing the game. And for that reason, that was a little pocket of finding something to be happy about, even though the overall record is still what it is. So what are you looking at in the remainder of the days of this season? I kind of just laid out for you what I see and what I'm looking for. How about you? What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm in a similar camp. I mean, if you're Kenny Payne, you know, I think barring any change of heart or anything, you know, drastically different from everything that I'm sure both of us have heard from pretty similar places, it seems like everything is on course for there to be a second year and for them to keep building. So if you're Kenny Payne, you're thinking, okay, what areas can I maybe improve my staff? And then in what areas does this team need to improve? And as you said, which of these guys can help us? I'm a big culture person. I think it's really important to make sure that you've got competitive people who really make your practices better, but they're not. You don't want them to be jerks off the court. I think that helps a lot. And this group does seem to have a pretty good group in terms of, or a pretty good mentality, I should say, among the group. And they seem to all get along. I think it tells us a lot that a team is 3-20, and you have not heard about you know, fights at practice or people leaving the team or guys selling out their coach and things like that. I mean, you have not heard any of that, which is a contrast to last year, at the end of last season with the way things went last year. So you got to just figure out, okay, look, you know, obviously I think Louisville goes into this offseason the same situation that it was in last year. They need a couple of playmaking guards. Now, L. Ellis's future, I believe, and I've had this confirmed previously, and now I'm starting to question myself again because it was like 6 months ago. I believe he technically is eligible for a COVID year, but I remember before the season he had said he wasn't really thinking in those terms. He was thinking about going pro. So if he is not on the roster, Louisville needs two playmaking guards, probably starting level guards. And so then you figure out, okay, outside of those two spots, who else can help us? And you look at the rest of these guys and who you have coming in, and you want to make sure that your team, going into the offseason, you know exactly what holes you need to fill, because it's going to be a really important year two for Kenny Payne. He's got to turn it around in a big, big way. And so you need to know, as you said, Bob, you need to know exactly what you have and what you think you can have, so that you can go about tinkering with it pretty quickly.
This will be the next point of contention, and I don't really want to, not in the mood to start fighting this quickly, but define turning it around in a big way for next year.
Oh, man, that's a big one. I think it depends on who you talk to. I mean, for me, and I've actually had a long conversation with my friend who is a absolute diehard Louisville fan the other day, and he said, I think they have to make the tournament next year, and I think that that's, I don't ever, with the way the portal works and the way college basketball, you can turn things around pretty quickly. I don't want to say that that's impossible, because it's certainly not. But I do think that for me, if I'm Josh Hurd, I want to see a team next year that is much more competitive, especially early on in the non-conference schedule. I think from a results standpoint, I think you need to have a team that's pushing 500 in the ACC. And just taking steps from that vantage point of learning how to finish games stronger. You avoid the BC game type situations where it felt like, and you obviously would know this as well as anyone, Bob, I mean, it felt like Louisville was in control for a lot of that game, and then you go into halftime, and yeah, it just kind of slipped away from them there in the final few minutes of that game, and it just felt like they lost, you know, their sensibilities of how to win a basketball game, and I think that's happened a few times this year. So I would want to know that my team, going into games that they feel like they can win, has a plan and knows how to execute it in the final 5 minutes, and it doesn't go south as it has a few times this past year. So there's ways to look at it from a wins and losses standpoint, in which case I would say I think you've got to definitely be pushing 500 and be a little bit even better than that, maybe an NIT team. But from a performance standpoint, there's just got to be a harder effort. I think you've got to have a clearer idea of what the team is trying to do. And that's a coaching. That's more of a coaching thing to me, and drilling it. But I think there just has to be improvement in a lot of different areas that would make me feel comfortable as an AD. Well, I'd be curious for your thoughts on it, because it's a very challenging question.
I agree with almost everything you said. And as for your friend, here's my answer to that, and here's why I won't say that about Kenny, and I wouldn't say that about anyone. Let's say they win one more game. All right, I don't know. Well, they got seven left, so they would be 4-27, I think, right? Somewhere around there. Okay, if you brought a new guy in, and from the outside, it's a guy, yeah, he's my guy, and you bring him in. Uh-oh, we got phones ringing. There we go. Did that go on the air, Nick?
Yeah, a little bit. Was it Mom? I bet it was Mom.
No, it might be. No, it was not Mom. Maybe that, or she moved. It was a different area code. But here's the point I was going to make about that. Like I said, let's say they win four games this year, and they're 4, and I think it would be 27, I think, if we're, maybe, I don't know, but somewhere in that neighborhood. If you brought a new guy in, Joe Jablonski, I love Joe Jablonski, he's fantastic. Oh, he's terrific. And he comes in next year, and he wins 14 games, you're going to want to have a parade for the guy. And that's just the way it is. We won four last year. My God, we're winning games again. We've got 14 wins, and we've got six wins in the league. And I know it's not great, but what a step forward. But when your friend says he's got to make the tournament or bust, well, that's not fair. Because nobody, you wouldn't bring anybody in from the outside in 1 year. Now, I understand the argument would be, well, but it's not his first year. Okay, fair. But it's still coming off of a four-win season. What's realistic to ask for? And you hit it on the head, I think. A different level of being competitive. If not 500, close enough where late in the year we'd be talking about could they get over the hump and be an NIT team. Now, that's not, somebody says that's a low bar you're setting. No, I'm not saying that's how good the team should be. Rick Pitino at NIT early in his career. Nobody was saying, yeah, attaboy, Rick, we want to be in the NIT every year. But you got to gauge it from where you are. I mean, my brother again, but that's what you say all the time. You always have to gauge where you came from, where you are, and where you're going. And that's what I would do with Kenny, not making a contingent on any hard and fast direct result, because, like I said, if you took over the team next year and got them from four wins to 14 wins, people would say, well, he's a boy wonder. He's a genius, this guy. But if you make it the same guy who was responsible for four, now suddenly it's not good enough. You're painting yourself into a terrible corner if you do that. That's my opinion. But your point is well taken. How did you get those 14 wins? If they could have been 19 wins, and late in games you pissed it away again, you made foolish decisions, the players were not looking like they were buying in as much as we think they are so far this year, well, yeah, then you got another topic, because that then being a second-year coach does come into play. But assuming that it's not going to be that, I can't see saying, well, it's the tournament or bust next year. That's, and nor do I think saying, to your point, if they were much more competitive, you know, they just eyeballed differently on the court, that's not significant. It is significant. And so, you know, people who want to make those decisions now, I just think are crazy. Now, by the third year, yeah, I think you'd agree, third year evaluation becomes quite a bit different, does it not?
Yeah, it does. And one other point to add to that, Bob, that I think is obviously really important, and you know, might have some people label me as being conservative, but I want to see who they get. You know, like
absolutely,
see who's on the
no roster. Question.
And you know, if an All-American guard from the MAC or you know the Missouri Valley or something decides to transfer, and Louisville lands them, and you've got a superstar coming in, well, that changes the calculus a little bit for me. I mean, you got to see what they have. But I agree with you. I did not know that rock bottom was as low as it has been this year for Louisville. I'll admit that, and I've been pretty harsh on Kenny Payne and the team for a while now. And I know we're all varying levels of criticism and trying to wrap our heads around it. I know you see a lot more than most people do because you're there for walkthroughs and things like that, and you obviously will have a different perspective than the next guy, and that's helpful. For me, you know, if this is rock bottom, if you know the run through Maui and some of those losses in December and some of the blowout losses in the ACC, if that's considered rock bottom for Louisville, I think you put yourself on a 3-year plan there, and you say, okay, next year you've got to be significantly improved from a performance standpoint, and you would hope that would result in, like you said, you know, 10 or 11 or 12 more wins, and that, you know, especially in the non-conference schedule where I feel like there were a lot of missed opportunities for Louisville, that should help their win totals. And then you say, okay, you've righted the ship a little bit. Your year two felt like probably what I think a fair amount of people thought year one would be like. So now you got to go make the tournament because that's what Louisville basketball is, and that's I think fair. But I think everyone should always be operating from this point, and that is, in general, all things considered, in a vacuum, nothing else, all these other factors not above, Louisville men's basketball should be in the NCAA tournament every year. Every year, it should. That's the standard, and there's like 8 programs that I would say, maybe 10 to 15. But really 6, 7, 8 programs that you would say with the resources, the history, the tradition, the backing, they should be in the tournament every year. And I think Kenny Payne knows that. It's not like that's a secret. So you just got to, if he's your guy, you got to give him the opportunity to work toward that goal of bringing that back to Louisville. But it's going to take a lot of work because of how things have gone this year.
I couldn't agree with everything you said there more. I think that's pretty much spot on. And I'll say this. First of all, two things. I didn't realize that Pitt was your alma mater. Nick just told me that. I didn't realize that.
What? So, oh, man. I've only been squawking about him for the last 10 years.
Yeah, well, I don't remember what I had for breakfast a lot of days, so I'm sorry. I haven't talked to you in a while. But the fact of the matter is that's perfect segue because, that tunnel that leads right into downtown, you know, where you know it is. The one you come out of that tunnel, I'll be honest with you, Pitt should make that some, maybe it is in their recruiting video because that is stunning.
Oh, it is.
You come out of
it's
that
fantastic.
Tunnel, breathtaking, gorgeous, especially at night with all the lights. Well, there's some sort, must be a major accident over there. Something, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 police cars with the sirens going into the tunnel, creeping into the tunnel because it's close to rush hour, so it's crowded. Anyway, we'll have traffic and weather on the 8th for you a little bit later. But anyway, right now, I bring up Pitt because here's the problem when you have knee-jerk reactions is you assume things. For example, the people, because, listen, no, I agree with you, or you didn't even mention it, but I'll volunteer it. Kenny himself would tell you. I mean, they struck out dramatically in the transfer portal before the season. They didn't get anybody of substance to help them. Well, how much you want to give all the blame to Kenny, some of the blame to Kenny, none of the blame to Kenny, because it was all related to the investigation hanging around. I don't know, and I don't care anymore, to be honest with you. But the fact that, my God, I'm sorry, it's actually distracting. Jeff, I'm not kidding you. There's got to be 20 police cars.
Yikes.
That's not an exaggeration anymore. What the hell would that be?
Not
a good sign there. Fortunately, we don't have to go through that to go to the game. But I've rarely seen that. Either a major wreck or it's an O.J. Simpson, white Bronco chase at low speed. I don't know what the hell it is. But honest to God, I don't know what that is. It's more than 20. It's still going. That's crazy. I got to get to the bottom of that because that's bizarre. Anyway, but the point being, now I talked myself out of exactly what I was saying here. Where you are on a year-to-year basis, you brought that up, and I'm glad you did because I might not have. And to me, you're 100% right. The evaluation actually starts before next year. Because that's what people want to see with good reason. They like a perfect example is Jeff Brohm. He hasn't coached a game here at Louisville, and the people want to have a parade for the guy because it was like every 15 minutes that he was signing another player. He was getting a kid to flip. He was, getting a big commitment. He was getting guys to transfer. That's what I think people want to see in the preseason, in this offseason with Kenny. And if he does that, I think the narrative will change. Now, you can't just go by that because I hate that. The 1-star, 5-star, 3-star, 6-star, he's this star, he's that star. Sometimes guys take players that you don't think, based on the recruiting quote unquote experts or anything special, but they say that kid is exactly the kind of kid I want to have in my program. I'm going long-winded here, but I'll get to a point eventually, I promise. The good example of that is Tom Izzo. Tom, by his own admission, they won that first national championship. I don't think anybody on that team, maybe one guy, was a top 50 recruit. And he has a term he uses to this day. It's OG. That's who he has to recruit. Okay, OGs. And you say, what the hell is he talking about? Our kind of guy. That's what he wants. Our kind of guy. And he said when they won that first national championship, he got caught up in, listen to everybody else. This kid's a 4-star. This kid's a 5-star. How can you not recruit him? He's like, well, okay. And he recruited him. And they were not, quote unquote, our kind of guy. And then he went back to recruiting his kind of guys, and they won another national championship, went to another Final Four, whatever it was. That's what I worry about with a guy who's not been a head coach before. Kenny knows the people are pissed, they're griping, they're complaining. I think he's got enough, confidence in evaluating players. He'll get who he wants, but I hope he doesn't think he's got to recruit for recruiting experts. You go down a dangerous path when you do that. You got to get guys who are our kind of guy. And he certainly, when you listen to him, Jeff, don't you think he certainly sounds like he knows how he wants to play? He's got a style in his mind. He doesn't, I don't think, have the personnel to do it yet, but I think he knows how he wants them to play. So he's got to get our kind of guys. And that's a fair time to judge him. If in the preseason, by whatever standard you want to use, you feel like, okay, this team has had a good makeover. They got good guys coming in, good players, then that's fine. So I'm not sure you got to wait till they start playing games next year. But that's I don't know that there's ever been a more important offseason in Louisville basketball. And that's saying something. But when I started all that and talking about Pittsburgh, the point I was making is you still can't get to hurried, because look at Jeff Capel. He's never had a winning season in 5 years, and now this year they might win the conference, and that's all largely because of transfers, the transfer portal. But you know what I'm saying? You got to go. Sometimes it can't just simply be black and white. You got to look at the whole component of the program. That includes the kinds of kids you're bringing in. That was a long way to get that point across. But as it's your alma mater, I thought they deserved that recognition. He's done a terrific job this year after some meh years leading into it, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, and he took over a program that was in really, really, really rough shape. And, yes, you know, I know people love making fun of Kevin Stallings. I certainly loved making fun of Kevin Stallings, but they went winless in the ACC. I mean, they had an atrocious last year for him. So there was a lot of work to be done. Now, that being said, I admit I was getting a little frustrated with Capel, and it was more because they had a hard time keeping guys who seemed to be talented players and had put together decent seasons, and they were 500 or so, and then they would all move on and, you know, transfer elsewhere. And seeing them have success elsewhere, or seeing them move on when they had more eligibility and a chance to keep building, had me pretty concerned. But this year has certainly, I think, rewarded Pittsburgh's faith in Capel, that you know, that he could find the right mix of guys. I think that's a big challenge, and you've got to figure out, okay, so this is just a scenario, hypothetical, this is not based on reporting or anything else, but say off the top of my head, you say, okay, Mike James, Kamari Lands, J.J. Treanor, those guys are all back, maybe a Jalen Withers is back, you bring in Caleb Glenn and Curtis Williams, you've got a core four, you've got the JUCO kid they just signed, okay, you've got a decent core there, and you say, okay, Huntley Hatfield and Ellis and Curry and those guys want to go pursue professional basketball overseas, G League, whatever they want to do. So then you go out and you say, okay, you've got a couple of guys, and Mike James especially, who showed you that he has a capacity to learn and grow and improve quickly. And he's certainly developed quite a bit this year, and used his redshirt year well, to his credit as well, coming back from an injury to really study it and learn. You look at J.J. Treanor, same thing. He's grown a lot as a player this year and has learned a lot about himself. So you say, okay, with these guys, you feel like you've got some guys who have the capacity to grow, but they probably need someone to stir the drink a little bit for them. So you've got to go out and you've got to find people like a Christian Cunningham, someone yes, like that, who's got that maturity and that ability to come in and be a leader and be the drink stirrer for people, to come in and be that guy for you. Jared West doesn't get enough credit for that, for the leadership that he provided. Obviously, the season went south, but that personality and those personality types will help a lot. But that's to your point, Bob, is you've got to go find guys who you think can fit in with your group, and can help move the program forward and set a standard. And that's where I feel like this year has been a little bit of a lost year, is I just don't know what standards have been set from the external messaging. I'm sure it's different internally. And again, I know you've seen different stuff than the rest of us. But from the external standpoint, I think a lot of us are wondering what standards have been set. And I think that's something that getting the right players in can really help you set those tones and set those standards to help build something.
I'll give you something that supports what you just said, and something that, well, support everything you said, but it's actually two different sides of the same coin, I guess. If you want to look at, if you believe, as I do, that the most important thing to get out of this year is figuring out who can play for you next year, you, honestly, I'm not blowing smoke up your skirt here, I think you gave as good an answer as anybody I've ever talked to. People love to piss and moan, and I'm not bashing them, but then I would say, okay, so do you agree with it? It's important to find out what players can play? Oh, absolutely. So who do you think can play? I don't know, you know. It's like, well, then that's the whole point. You got to decide, and you did. I agree with everything you said. I think Mike James is considering he hasn't even played in a year. Forget about everything else. He hasn't even played in a year. Even if he were perfectly healthy for that whole time, that's a big adjustment. JJ has really shown. I thought he'd been gone this year, and he's really shown something over the last like month. I mean, he's made some big athletic plays at times, not consistent yet, but showing flashes of not just decent play but brilliant play. Honestly, so he's got that going. I think a core four is going to be a terrific player. I really do. If he can get in into the game without fouling the referee, I think, you know, he's got a chance to really turn into something great. And for that reason, I don't think it's a totally wasted year, because those guys are here and in all likelihood will be back. As I said, if I didn't say it once, I might be repeating myself. I think Okorafor has a chance to be a really good player. Here's the problem. Their biggest problem in my mind now, after watching 24 games, for all the talk about they aren't scoring and they don't have a lot of shooters, but it's defensively. That when things go south on them, they can't guard chairs. And I love L. I really do. I give that kid tons of credit for being asked to do all the things he's doing. But you kind of read between the lines a little bit last game where Kenny said, you know, there are times when L doesn't look like he's really interested in the defensive side of the game. Well, that's a problem, because remember all those great teams that Pitino had, especially. What was the first thing he always talked about? Is the ability of his point guard to put pressure and disrupt the other team. You know, he had Siva that could do that. He always had a guy that could go out and just dog, as he used to call it, dog the other team. Well, this team doesn't have that, and so that's a disappointment, because of all the things when you're rebuilding, Jeff, and I don't know if you agree with that, but I'll throw it out there. The easiest, not easy, but easiest to instill is to get guys to want to commit to playing defense, because that is the least skilled part of the game. It really is. I mean, offensively, you got to have shooting touch and range and know how to play without the ball. Defensively is more about just going out there and ripping your chest open and saying, you know, you're not gonna get this shot off. You're not gonna beat me off the screen. And they don't have that. That's disappointing. They're gonna have to find guys who can do that. But your point again, spot on. Take Jared West, take Cunningham, and just put them on this team. Nobody else. How many more wins do you think they have? 4 or 5? I don't think that's an exaggeration. Maybe even more than that.
Yeah, no, I probably. With those guys, and especially Cunningham, you know, Jared West is an excellent defender. Just turned out to be a little bit more limited offensively than I think a lot of us were expecting. But great leader, great defender. You had to have him on the floor a lot of the time. Christian was such a great example of a guy who just did everything well for Louisville. And that first season, it was really interesting talking to guys like Ryan McMahon and Dwayne Sutton and guys who had carried over from Pitino and into David Padgett and then to Chris Mack, and talking to them about the process of learning a very different way to defend as a team and as an individual, which obviously are both connected. But, you know, that's something too, and it's probably a name that you've got to be careful talking a whole lot about these days, but a credit to Chris Mack, especially in those first 2 years, they spent a ton of time learning how to defend as a group and defend as a unit. And they had some games that it really showed. I'll never forget the experience of being in the Dean Dome when they beat North Carolina and what that was like. And that was kind of their statement game of saying, this is what it looks like when we execute what we're trying to do, especially defensively. And a big reason for that was the communication of guys like Chris and Cunningham. And when you have someone who takes it seriously, who wants to learn, who wants to help other guys learn so that your team is good in your last year in college or, you know, your last 2 years in college, that's really important. And that is a huge, huge plus to any roster. So not only do you need to go find guys with that mentality, you need them to be talented enough to start and produce at a high level in the ACC. And that's that pool of candidates has to be pretty small. But I think Louisville is going into this offseason really understanding that they've got to absolutely knock it out of the park with these guys and absolutely make sure that they get at least one guy like that for their backcourt, if not two. And then I think they need a big guy who kind of has the same mentality to help out with the front court, to kind of take control of that front court and be that vocal leader who understands what they're trying to do. Because like we said, I mean, they've got some decent pieces there. And you can put together a team a million different ways. You talk about Okorafor coming from NBA Africa and all that. I mean, you can put together a team a variety of ways. But the bottom line is that you look at a team like Pitt, a team like Clemson, both of them having great years this year. What do they have? They've got veteran guys who are setting the tone for the rest of the team. They've got nice pieces, but when it comes down to it, they've got guys who know the system, have learned it a little bit, and are kind of dictating it for everybody else and helping make sure that the team is on the same page. And that's a huge step forward. But again, as we keep saying, you got to go find those guys, and you got to nail your evaluation, and it has to play out the way you expect it to play out when you make those evaluations.
Absolutely. Oh, the V-Show Orchestra is playing, so it means we got to get out of here. So, Jeff, it's good to catch up with you. We haven't talked in a while, and I always appreciate it. You brought good stuff to the table, which you always do, and we appreciate that as well. So I'll see you soon, I hope. Take care.
All right. Thanks, Bob. Right, see you soon.
Jeff Greer, and that's it for us. Game coming up tonight. We'll see you tomorrow here, unless you know something I don't, on the V-Show, ESPN 680 105.7. Sweeney's next.
Metro College is a program that helps students pay for tuition, and I didn't believe it. You have to work third shift 5 days a week. It's a great and rewarding thing when you graduate. I would do it all over again, just like I just did.
You know those buddies who magically become medical professionals when you're not at the top of your game? The ones who say,
"Come on, muscle through it."
But then also say,
"Hey, you should probably see my specialist."
Or surgery or pain meds. It's almost always false, false, and false. Athletico's physical therapists, the same therapists who work with professional athletes, can tackle those little aches and pains from the start, before they become big ones. So next time, don't believe everything you hear. Instead, start with Athletico. Schedule your free assessment at athletico.com.